You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Jose Solis. In this episode of Token Theater Friends, I'll be talking to Michael Breslin, Patrick Foley, and Kat Rodriguez, the creative minds behind a theater and media company called Fake Friends. They have a new show out called Circle Jerk, a hilarious commentary on white gaze and cancel culture, which they will be performing live and streaming through November 7. I talked to Michael, Patrick, and Kat about what it's like to be young theater makers creating theater during a worldwide pandemic. And I have to warn you, we did some shots, so it was actually a lot of fun, so I hope you enjoy as well.
Welcome to the Circle Jerk edition of the show. So Michael Breslin, Patrick Foley, and Kat Rodriguez, thank you for joining me. To get started, can you explain to people what your Circle Jerk is?
So our Circle Jerk is a live stream theatrical event. It's not necessarily a play, but it's a live stream theatrical event featuring three performers, me, Patrick, and Kat, each playing three characters in a sort of gay, queer send-up tribute to Charles Ludlam's The Mystery of Irma Vep. And it's a three-act comedy about white gay men on an island not far from here. It's a summer island, but it is January. And the owner of the house is canceled and devises a plot to seek his revenge. And I feel like that's...
That's so gorgeous.
Description. lots of costumes and more wigs than people, which is always good.
100%.
I attended a FaceTime. Well, I wasn't FaceTime. You weren't on FaceTime. I attended a rehearsal the other day. And like, I was like, this is a complete compliment, obviously, because I kind of think that's what you're going for. All the characters are so punchable. I wanted to like kick everyone in the ass.
That's great. I love that.
That's good.
Sometimes I just walk around kicking myself in the ass. I feel you.
I'm really curious because like the three of you, I mean, like even though like all of you like look really cool, but you're like super theater nerds. And like how do like cool people end up becoming like super theater nerds?
There's no coolness here, I don't think.
your answer is refuting our coolness.
No, yeah, it's only theater nerds.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, so we have a new company that we started called Fake Friends, and this is our like first official production as that company. But we've done with Ariel Seibert, so it's the three of us plus Ariel Seibert, and three of us, me, Kat, and Ariel, met as dramaturgy students at a vocational school in Connecticut, and Patrick was an acting student. So we don't like to always like say the Yale thing because it's sort of like annoying, but we met in the dramaturgy department where you know, we were nerds for sure, but I would say that we were like cool nerds, and Patrick was sort of like a nerd in the acting department because he's incredibly intelligent and bright and critically minded.
Yeah, and I would say in addition to having a varied interest in form and also in extending performance beyond regional theater, if we're going to talk theater, beyond theater itself, considering pop culture, the kind of media that we consume on our phones, on the big screen, on any kind of screen, whether it's curated under that guise or appears as if it has no touch to it. I think we are all interested engaging those kinds of media and dissecting them and figuring out why we respond to them individually and as a culture. And so that meant that we were having conversations not only in the classroom and not only amongst each other, that was, you know, what we were studying and what we were doing practically in terms of our training, because it is a vocational school in that you are in classes and you are, you know, doing quote unquote real world, right, collaborations at the same time. We were also folding in conversations that, you know, were not the stuff of the curriculum, that was not the stuff of a syllabus. So I think that finding people who are kin in that, who can speak, you know, multiple languages, right? And who can affirm the validity of that respondents and of that critique and cultural engagement, I think was really exciting, really energizing. And then it allowed our conversations to be extremely specific, I think, amongst us all.
See, but that's precisely what you mean. Like right now I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, this sounds so cool. It's like a thesis. And then like every time that I read something for Circle Jerk, I was like, this sounds like the nerdiest like thing in the whole world. But then like I'm actually watching the rehearsal and it's like a really funny, like American Pie-ish, like, you know, rowdy kind of comedy. So I would love to hear you talk about that, about how you turn those ideas that are super, like, I feel like I should be wearing like my monocle and like look like the Monopoly guy. But then like in practice, they're like comedies and they're funny. And they're like, how do you like marry that, you know, like super like intellectual, like love for theater with making really entertaining work as well?
I think like entertainment, the entertainment factor is like the key thing that we're after. And, you know, in terms of like the gestation of our three pieces, like oftentimes it's, I think something that is maybe important to note is that the first play we all worked on together was a play called This American Wife, which is about it's about a lot of things, but it centers around a sort of dissection and estrangement of the Real Housewives franchise. And we started working on it because Michael and I were in rehearsals for a piece together, and we found out that we were both sort of accidental experts in this topic. And so we started like batting ideas together, and then we both realized, this was like the first day we met, and then we like both realized we had the same sort of like theatrical gods and icons. And so we were like, let's do a mashup of sort of like the Real Housewives and the Worcester Group. And like, that should be fairly, I don't know, fun for us if for no one else. But because our first show was based on a topic that we had a truly encyclopedic knowledge in, for the subsequent two shows, we've like based the generative process in a lot of research, so that we can like meet ourselves at that same level. That said, we're all deeply stupid and have like deeply slapstick, I mean, like Michael, deeply like slapstick, sometimes pun oriented or like onomatopoetic kind of senses of humor. And Michael has this like joke that like, there's like such a thing as like a Foley Rodriguez joke, which is where like Kat and I make a really like bad pun or like double entendre. And
it starts okay.
It starts okay.
Okay, and then it...
It starts okay, like we could have walked away and like we wouldn't have been humiliated, but instead we're like, no, like we need to get that laugh. And so we like beat it.
And in that, Patrick and I are really pushing again. No, I'm enjoying riffing on each other. I think that humor is so important. Comedy is so important. The ability to laugh is an essential part of critique and criticism. And I think that, you know, sometimes when I am invited to speak or I'm speaking on a subject, I'm talking about, you know, isms and systems, et cetera. I'm either misunderstood as wanting a kind of popular culture, a kind of theater, or a kind of whatever art it is that is the Disney version, right? That is the ideal version. And then there, I think sometimes I'm misunderstood as wanting like doom and, you know, just like what I would refer to as pornographic, you know, trauma porn, poverty porn, you know, like slapping people upside the heads. And I think that that what both of those things miss is a nuance, right? And what is human is the nuance, that it's much more complicated, that it's much more, I think, productive and interesting and provoking to go after what is gray, not necessarily, not to say that every single thing is gray, but I think it's so much more human to invest in the contradictions and to mine why they exist and where that tension comes from, because they often point at, you know, things that are much bigger, right, than the individual. And that's not to say that we are, you know, mini products, right, of our time. Absolutely not. We have agency within that. I think, though, that, you know, the comedy and, you know, Jose, you finding that that was kind of American Pie, right? Like, we're absolutely influenced by that, I think, you know, culture. That's what we came up in. And so, you know, part of it is putting ourselves under the microscope, right? Why is that funny to our sensibility? You know, what are we actually laughing at? Blah, 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 all that kinds of shit.
Okay, I'm about to ask questions about quarantine, so I think we should do our first shot. Oh, if we're gonna do more than one. Is this too small?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do a little bit more.
A little bit more.
I mean, what's gonna happen when viewers find out we record this at 9 in the morning? No, I'm kidding.
Exactly.
Okay, I think this is too big, but whatever. You only live once. Cheers.
Ooh.
Holy shit.
It wasn't good tequila.
Oh.
I started with Casamigos.
Oh my God, Kat.
Well, there was this much left in the box.
Absolutely, Casamigos. Yes.
The guy at my liquor store, what's that? The guy at my liquor store convinced me to buy this like banana whiskey. It is like the strangest, most like, yeah, it's like so weird.
Banana whiskey.
Is it good?
Define good.
Okay.
Well, no. It's better than when I was like finally starting to drink, and this is such a trash story, you know, I'm from New Orleans and I somehow did not participate in that aspect of the culture. I don't know. I don't know. I was
You're there. A good Catholic girl. That's
yeah,
what it is.
Yeah, probably that. remember like when I became of age and I was like, okay, I'm gonna drink, but I had obviously trash taste because I hadn't drank anything before. I was like, I was looking on the internet, I was like, oh my God, chocolate wine? Don't do it. Don't do it.
Let me write that down.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna pass anyway, but like I was addicted. Do you remember those like vodkas that came like in plastic bottles that were like cotton candy flavor and like marshmallow flavor? I loved all of them so much. Like I wish there were still like a thing so I could mix them with my what is it, like claw thing.
Oh yeah.
eBay somewhere.
Last White Claw.
Yeah. Can you imagine me eBaying like marshmallow vodka? No, I don't know. But maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
So Michael, you teach theater also. And like since we've established that all of you are like huge theater nerds, I wanna hear, because all of you are very young and everything. So I wanna hear you talk a little bit about that. Right now it seems that we're like caught in this like limbo where like the old guard, so to speak. And I imagine like many of your professors and mentors in many ways have declared that theater doesn't exist right now, that it's on pause and that we're just waiting for the vaccine and then things are gonna go back to like normal. However, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And the three of you, are actually doing, you know, like Michael, like at the beginning, you didn't describe this as a play, but rather as an experience. So I would love to hear you talk about what is theater then now, and like has your idea of what theater is changed during the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, that question has really been like the driving question for our work since This American Wife. Like one of the lines in Doll's House Part 3 which was an adaptation of Doll's House Part 2, but we didn't read or see Doll's House Part 2. Sort of a conceptual joke. But one of the lines that one of the young characters said was like, in this house, theater is dead and content is queen, which is sort of like, it was a darkly ironic statement in that show, but we are really, we have been thinking about how this like content culture, this online multi-platform culture sort of like fits into a theatrical, you know, ensemble or working methodology. So with this show, I mean, there's so much to say on this question. I think that theater, Patrick and I were on a call of 2 days ago or something, and we were talking about like, you know, what is theater? And without getting too much into the like dramaturgy, ivory tower, like this is what theater is. I would say that for this specific experience, we're super inspired by like YouTubers, like people who do like YouTube Live, or there's this amazing YouTuber, I don't know if you know her, her name is ContraPoints, and she makes these like, we have to send you a link. She yeah. makes these like hour long, super queer, very flamboyant, Baroque sort of like YouTube philosophical essays, like essay videos. And they're almost like John Waters and like a philosophy seminar at a college, like sort of mashed up. So we were super inspired by her work. And I find that work to be very theatrical. It's about costume. It's about display. It's about characters. She shifts characters a bunch in them. I think all these theatrical principles are absolutely present in our online life as it exists now. And I think, Jose, what you say about like the old guard and what some people might call like gatekeepers or, you know, whatever, we need to like really push against that and like think about ways that, you know, the internet is a way to make things more accessible, to allow other voices who have been historically shut out to like express their voices. And I think like we were saying the other day, like Ziwei's baited live streams that she does on her Instagram feel like super theatrical. And that's not like a unique opinion for someone like of our generation. Like most people log in to see like the live encounter between her and her audience. So I don't know, any other thoughts on that?
Well, I was gonna tease out or ask you to tease out, Michael, something since you started with the Doll's House Part 3 quote about content. Is I remember a conversation that we were having in which you said, you know, that was really that piece, like when we were making it, was, you know, YouTubers and YouTube gurus and, you know, tutorials and all of that was really like, you know, at its height. And since then, the idea of what is content has gotten a little bit more, you know, not complicated, but there's just a little bit more meat, I think, to the discussion. So given Jose's question, I wanted to ask you, you know, that was true of Doll's House Part 3. In what ways has the idea of like content shifted since then that is part of this conversation about theater?
So thank you. That's actually a really good guiding question. This is what dramaturgs, you know, we just talk and we ask questions. I think the really exciting part of this show, Circle Jerk, for us is like finding the equivalence of like theater and this like horrible fake news, misinformation era that we live in. This idea that like content can be manipulated, which I think is often like heavily associated with like theater of like, you know, it's not real, it's fake. Which is like the fake friends thing. But this idea of fake news, viral videos, all being sort of like in this economy of clicks and of like, you know, in 2016, we might say like the alt-right, now it looks different. I mean, it's so rapidly evolving, like how these trolls online manipulate content to spread misinformation and propaganda. I mean, the COVID pandemic has shown us, you know, the Plandemic video, I think, is the best example of like the horrific virality of content and what damage it can do. So that's definitely like, as you said though, Jose, like the show is very madcap and like not, you know, it doesn't take that serious tone, But we're definitely interested in those themes right now.
We should have done like a drinking game. Every time someone said content, would do a shot. We would be like on the floor right now.
Not too late to start.
I mean, it's a concept. It's a concept that I am critical of. This idea of like everything is content. But at the same time, I think some, you know, content, this economy could be a way for theater makers to, you know, take the reality that we're living in and move forward rather than be like, oh, when are we going to go back? It's like, well, I think the past few months, this is such a cliche thing now to say, but like the past few months have shown us, like, do we really want to go back? Like, I think we need to think in different ways.
Go back to what?
Exactly. Yeah. Can we go back?
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a pun, and I don't know if you know this, because I don't think I ever wrote about it, but I saw This American Wife at Next Door at New York Theater Workshop.
Oh my God.
And I went because I love a pun, and I was like, I love This American Life because I'm secretly an 80-year-old white woman.
Same.
But I have never in my life seen a single episode of any of the Real Housewives shows. However, once I was there and you were like, so I remember like there were like screens and you were like lip syncing at times to what the characters were saying. And I have no idea who any of these women are. I've never seen them before. But I knew what they were talking about because like so many of the things that they say become part of the fabric of how we talk. Yes. And it's that thing where you know the show even if you've never seen the show. So as young theater makers, have you found a resistance when you're trying to do work that speaks to, because, you know, like, for so many reasons, the pop culture of each era, I think, is always seen as less than, as lesser, right? As, like, not good enough. Have you found a lot of resistance and people being like, how are you making a show about the Real Housewives and not about, I don't know, I can't even think of, like, wives that would be approved, you know, like, I don't know, like, why are you making a show about, like, Karl Marx or something, or, like, that?
Yeah.
We were, yeah.
I mean,
oh,
I
you were?
I think This American Wife was interesting because it sort of landed us in a weird place that people, that we struggled to communicate to people before they had seen the show, where people were like, why don't you just do it at Joe's Pub? And we were like, well, yes, but there is, like, an aesthetic sort of interrogation happening that we, like, also want to experience, not just, like, sound buffer sponge walls and, like, you know, a projector. But I mean, I think it goes back to the question at the beginning, which is that, like, we always want to, like, leave people thinking and then make them laugh and then make them think about why they laughed. And so playing with the expectations that people bring into the space is something that's really exciting for us. And so, for example, with Circle Jerk, the ad campaign and the sort of like visual language that we're introducing to people, it's very important to us to sort of like set them up for an experience that in some way we can either undercut or exploit.
I'm gonna have a shot because I want to ask you something about Circle Jerks.
Yes.
Yes.
but I would just say to that question too, Jose, like that question is so perceptive about our work, so thank you. And yes, we do receive a lot of like doubts and sort of like skepticism about making work about these subjects. And I know that it, like, you know, the four members of the company are all queer identifying in some way, and this relationship between the queer subject or queer person and like popular culture is a distinct relationship. You know, like gay men worshiping divas. You know, one of my favorite books is The Queen's Throat by Wayne Kustenbaum, like where he talks about gay men and their obsession with like opera divas. But this, you know, that's a trope and that's like a real thing. And I find it is frustrating sometimes to be like, yeah, we're doing a show about the Real Housewives and people are like, oh, I know what that is. I'm not gonna, you know.
Well, it's so insidious. It's so insidious. You know, I think it's both in the theater circle in terms of, you know, like producing or whatever, you know, that. But it's also in terms of, you know, the critical conversations around it, right? And how something is received or understood or how it is contextualized. And I mean that, you know, It's not only, of course, it is also present in the critics and the conversations that are had, you know, reviewing a show. And it's something I know that Michael encountered, that Patrick, I know you encountered, that Ariel encountered also within graduate school, right? In terms mm-hmm. of how our writing or how our work was understood. And it can be extremely patronizing and to try to validate or legitimize, yes, please drink to that, validate or legitimize. So it feels like gaslighting, right? To hear, you know, oh, that's not whatever, or that's not it, when you know, the culture that you are a part of and you understand it because somebody else doesn't or does and values it so little, it's extremely frustrating. And also it's exciting that it hasn't stopped us, right? That I think it's become a kind of, you know, gasoline or like, you know, really dry wood for our fires that keeps us pushing forward.
But I'm glad that you're both talking about something that I'm like, that's like, so, wow, the whiskey's like hitting me. What you're talking about in terms of like the audiences that are also like you're reaching in so many ways, the one audience that you probably can't reach right now because of what it looks like right now are critics. And they're the ones who like would refuse to like, I mean, I don't refuse to watch Real Housewives for some like moral or whatever like thing. I'm just really worried because like I'm like, I fear that if I like it too much, I'm gonna end up like watching all of it. And well, I don't need more TV shows in my life.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about that, you know, like as like as young theater makers, and this is not something that happens just only to you, but for most young theater makers, a lot of complaints that I hear from people who want to be critics who are BIPOC and definitely like much, much, much younger. And if they're white, they're much younger than the current critical establishment. They seem to be living again, like in this like parallel universe where pop culture doesn't exist, where all we have is like O'Neill and Miller and like Brecht and that's it. And that's the world that we live in. And you know, music doesn't exist, Rihanna doesn't exist, Real Housewives don't exist. And I'm like, it's so sad because like right now should be the moment when in many ways your work is criticism also. And it's like this beautifully done like theatrical essay in a way, it's pop culture commentary. So how do you help me or how do I help you get to critics? Like, do we just like vanquish the existing ones and wait for new ones to arrive? Or how do we get them to open their minds? Because like they don't want to open their minds.
I mean, do we need to? I mean, do we need to get them to open their minds? When we did This American Wife at the Yale Cabaret, we got like a really snarky review from like a New Haven newspaper source. And we like incorporated it into the show the next day. And that kind of like, and all of our pieces are built to be flexible in that way and to be meta-theatrical in that way and to engage with people ignoring us or criticizing us or celebrating us in that way. I think that, you know, the critics are going to deal the blow to themselves if they don't keep up with the direction that the culture is moving in. And well, they'll become less relevant. So it sort of won't matter.
Yeah, I'll drink to that. Yeah. I want to ask, because, you know, like, I want to be very respectful of your time. I did have a question about Circle Jerks, because when I first saw the name of the show, I was like, I love the name of the show so much, because when I was in high school, I was the gay one, right? Clearly. However, I was the only one who didn't go to the Circle Jerks, because I thought they were so gross. All my, like, straight classmates would have Circle Jerks, and they would invite me, and I'm like, and you say I'm gay? I wonder if you have any memorable like high school, like college era, like Circle Jerk experiences or non-experiences that you want to share.
Well, in middle school, I feel like every sleepover was a Circle Jerk. Wait, you guys know this. We've talked about this.
No, but like not a literal one.
Okay, so we were in circles jerking, but we were not jerking each other.
Right. No, that is way more literal than I thought.
It was like, this is the thing. They're the smart ones. They're the sort of like metaphorical ones. And I'm the one like being like, we need a fart joke here.
You're like, no, we weren't touching each other's D's. Like, we were.
Yeah. I live in the literal.
I have to say, I'm more like you. Well, actually, I was unaware of any homoerotic activity going on, like in anywhere I was. I was mostly just friends with the girls. So they weren't like.
Different kind of homoerotic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. more based on, processing. I'm kidding. So I never knew about them until I discovered porn. Like, it wasn't a concept in my mind. Or actually, I think it was actually the Spring Awakening production, the original production of Spring Awakening.
Mm.
Where I was like, what is that?
Hanchin or whatever.
So that's like even gayer than like a traditional circle jerk. You learn about it from a musical.
You know, when you put it that way, yes. Wait, Kat, what about you?
Yeah.
I don't know that I have any... not defined as like people sitting in a circle. I guess the closest thing that nobody on this call knows about that I would have to that is that when I was in elementary school, I had a really good friend who would come over, and we were really young. I would put us maybe at like 11 or 12. Like best friends kind of thing. And then, we enjoyed giving each other massages. And then another girl, her best friend, came to my home, and we were inviting her into our massage practice. And I offered my body as tribute. That I was gonna get this great massage, and then I was gonna give a massage, and then give another massage. And they put like shaving cream, they put a whole bunch of like gross stuff on me. And I think, like, yeah, I think that was actually a really scary experience. That's the closest thing that I have, and it didn't end well for me, because something that was really beautiful, got turned into something I think that was really mean. And it is no surprise that it was amongst girls, and it's no surprise that it was also, like femme on femme, I think, interaction. And it got shut down by another girl who came in and was like, I can only assume was like, what the fuck was that? What is this? And then my friend was like, oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not expect that.
Yeah, I did not expect that.
I know, nobody said, I know.
Well, that's our musical.
that's almost like a scene cut from like American Beauty or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So make it a musical.
It wasn't allowed to become a circle jerk.
Oh, that's very, very sad. But last thing that I want to ask you right now, wow, that risk is strong, is how, right now that we're all in different places. Like, I'm assuming that you can't gather. It was like, it was heartbreaking, but it was also very exciting to see the rehearsal and people wearing masks. I'm like, oh, people are wearing masks because there's a pandemic, but also like people are wearing masks and doing shows. So what are some things that you have maybe discovered about working remotely and working digitally and not being able to see each other as often that are things that are actually pretty cool that you wanna borrow and continue if you're ever allowed to see other people again?
So one thing that we have done, again, like from the first show, but actually wound up being a great tool for this show, is that we are Google Doc like oriented for the script. So the script is like, for this show, we do have a very legitimate script, but for the past two shows, they were more like
suggestions,
performance scores. But that, they're accessible by everyone, like the designers, the writers, the directors, the dramaturgs, whoever's working on it. So we can update it in real time, and everyone has access to the living document, which is sort of amazing. And in COVID, it was just another tool that was really great. And then we did our paper tech and a lot of our design meetings and a lot of our creative, you know, development meetings like over Zoom. And honestly, not having like the commute or the you know, because like we developed this at Ars Nova and we all live in Brooklyn, and that's like an hour commute both ways to like get there. And sometimes we would just need to go to have like a single meeting about like when are the cues gonna land. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I feel is a cool skill.
We're also very good friends. So in a certain way, not having the danger of the bar next door has been like really good in sort of like promoting productivity.
I love that.
I mean, I think our process has always been really digitally inclined. And the kind of, you know, conversations I think that used to happen that I miss, honestly, you know, after a rehearsal or after a show or like, you know, oh, we're just so happen to be in the same area, you know, let's meet up. Those kinds of things are awesome and nice and also very influential on the work. You know, those conversations are really important, have now moved to, you know, text conversations. And I think that there is the opportunity to be more intentional at the same time in terms of like, you know, reaching out to somebody and reaching out as a friend versus like reaching out as like, okay, now we're going to talk work. Right. Before, I think, because, you know, it would be like after we did something that was the show or like, you know, we're meeting. It's just not conflation is a bad thing. But now it's like more intentional, like scheduling meetings for all of us to get together to like talk for an hour, for example. But it's also, I think, you know, just to acknowledge the flip side of it with pandemic is that I recognize like I'm way more inclined now to unplug. I was way more plugged in before the pandemic. And one of the ways in which, you know, just like Zoom burnout and also just like loneliness, you know, it means that also technology, it can be hard to take that step versus like my ass has to be at rehearsal. And so therefore I'm available. So it's always been a part of our process, and it is really good now that we can be intentional. And also I think that there, you know, sometimes that it is a little hard because we miss each other. You know, I miss seeing everybody in 3D.
Well, I'm glad that I brought the bar to
Thank you. Yes.
Before I ask you to invite people to, I love your glass. It looks like a lighter.
This, I think it's supposed to be like a lipstick thing or I actually don't know. It's my roommate's.
I wanted to ask you something, Patrick, because yeah. I think it's you. One of your avatars on social media is that kid from Satyricon, right?
Exactly, yeah.
That's the creepiest, but also like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Well, the movie, it's so funny. So this is an example of how I am maybe I'm stupid, but people think I'm smart. I had not seen that movie when I made that my icon. I saw the picture and I loved it. And I thought it looked like kind of like me as a kid. So I put it up there. A flash forward to like a month and a half ago, in costume talks for, there's a character in Circle Jerk called the Troll, who's kind of like a Dionysian chaos merchant who's immortal. And he serves as a kind of narrator / instigator in Circle Jerk that I play. And so we were talking about the costumes, and our costume designer Cole was like, oh, so like Satyricon. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, you know, your Instagram picture, Satyricon. And I like went home and I watched it and I was like, this is exactly what this play is. It's like violent gay people in ancient Greece. Like, this is the play.
Maybe yeah. You're a prophet then.
On a deeply visceral level that not even you understood at the time.
And that's the thing, like there's a spiritual presence in my artistry that doesn't align with what's happening up here.
I love it. So would you like to invite our viewers and our listeners to check out Circle Jerk and what the dates and how they can find it, and if you have any other works that are streaming or available to purchase or whatever, plug everything right now.
Woo!
Okay.
come to the Circle Jerk live October 18th through 23rd at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're hoping to get global audiences.
Global.
You can find ticket information, which goes from $5 to $50 if you're feeling like you want to support artists in this time. At circlejerk.live is the website, and all the information is there. You'll purchase your ticket, and then you'll receive a password to the Vimeo link. It's at 7:30 p.m., but I think maybe
the 22nd.
Day that presidential debate is happening, is at 7 p.m. instead of 7:30, but that's not fully announced yet, so I don't think that we should.
Oh, yeah. It might happen. It might not.
Yeah, we don't know.
Got it. All of the words in presidential debate happening are in scare quotes.
Exactly. But that's an amazing double feature. Circle Jerk followed by the jerk that happens in a circle.
I was under the miss something. I thought that you were going to like do like a show, and then like the rest of the dates were going to be like the recorded version, and you're going to be doing it live every night.
We're doing it live every night at 7:30, 6 performances, all 3 of us in the space, 13 cameras, switching between 13 cameras, 4 different sets. It's going to be a spooktacular, yeah.
And then it'll be available on demand for like 2 or 3 weeks after those 6 live performances.
Wow, so y'all are crazy. Like, do people get like a special, like if they punch like a card with like, if they attend every performance?
I love that.
I mean, the performances will all be different. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
In and of itself.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, and break a leg and have fun at your circle jerk. And I'll see you there.
Thank you so much for having us.
Love you.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you had fun, because it was truly a blast to get to talk to Michael, Patrick, and Kat about their work. They're really, 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 really talented. And they're also really funny people. You can go to circlejerk.live for more information to get tickets. And you should do that right now, because this is a unique opportunity to experience live theater from home. Well, I have your attention. I want to invite you to become our patron on Patreon. We have tiers starting at $1. And you get bonuses, including a weekly newsletter with recommendations outside of theater from both me and Deep, as well as bonus Q&As with our interviewees that week, and much, much, much more. We're hoping to build a really amazing community of Tolkien Theater friends on our Patreon. So come join us, won't you? Give us a chance. Again, it starts at $1. And in the meantime, this has been Jose Solis. This is Tolkien Theater Friends. We have new episodes every week and features on our website, tolkientheaterfriends.com. So go check it out, and we'll see you next time.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.